that we figure, well, why he gave? And he came. And when he came, he saw. So he saw the people in ways that I think we miss people. You know, I think we have a lot of people around us sometimes, but we don't really know what's going on with them. He noticed, and had compassion. He said they were helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. He looked into their lives, and he had compassion. He saw people who were sick, and he didn't feel compassion for them and heal them. He gave them their sight. He allowed them to walk. He allowed them to hear. He raised them from the dead. He acted. He saw the masses who had come out to hear him, and it was a full day, and he figured them out that they were hungry, and they had a long way to go. So he made a meal for 10,000. He found out that one of his best friends was really sick and about to die. And he waited. And his friend died. And he went and raised him from the dead. He knew the disciples, what they were going through. They were in a boat and they thought they were going to die. And so he walked out from them and fixed the problem. Jesus was a man of action. What do we learn from that? A couple things I want you to see. That Jesus was moved by the things around him, and he acted appropriately. He didn't always act the same way, but he sensed and acted in a way that God wanted him to. He saw people, he saw needs, he saw things that weren't right, and he did something about it. He didn't act on everything, though. He did not heal every person that was sick in Israel. He did not raise everyone who died. He acted when and how the Father told him. That's something that you need to catch. He didn't act upon things the way people thought they should. He didn't always act in the timing. Mary and Martha, Lazarus' brothers, were really confused. Why in the world he didn't come? They acted pretty upset with him. And he said, trust me. And that's what he asked us to do too. He wanted sense from the Father when and to whom and the how he was supposed to intervene. And he was not afraid to act. First thing, you need a little background sometimes when you read the Bible, but when he spoke to the woman at the well, number one, men did not speak to women openly like that. Number two, a Jewish man would not speak to a Samaritan woman. He did both. When he met the leper, most people would back away because if you touched him, not only could you maybe get leprosy, but you'd also be unclean. You'd have to go through this elaborate ceremony to be unclean. Heal them, not by speaking it, which he could have done, and he had done. Touched him. That was not an option. He wanted to let him know, I identify with you and I will heal you. I will even touch you and affirm you as a person. I'm not afraid to touch you. He was not afraid to act, even though misguided religion would tell him to not do that. For instance, he healed people on the Sabbath, and when the religious leaders at that time told him, you are breaking the law, you are demonstrating until the contempt of the law, he said, I am the Lord of the Sabbath. And you would help even your animal. Why would I not help one of my own who is in need? Jesus acted. So what did Jesus teach us? A couple things. Real briefly, I have a down on the sheet there. First, he told us that there's a way to evaluate the way we love. And just by looking at life, making sure that it's not only with words, not just the only way to do it. It's not only with words, but also with deeds and with truth. First John 3, I think we should pull that up. It says this. By this we know now that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our life for our brothers. If anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? Little children, let us not walk in word or talk. What is he saying there? He says, some of you are loving away with words alone. You do that against God. He said in Isaiah 29, he said, my people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. He had challenged them all along. It's not really about what you say. It's really about what you do. Jesus made a hard statement in 6:6. He said, why do you call the Lord Lord? Because they did. They would honor him. He said, why do you call the Lord Lord, but you don't do what I say? Problem here. Your love isn't sincere. Or the way that we love others. You and I will tell people that we love them Secondly, he tells us that we're told to see and be aware of the needs around us and seek to meet them. We need to be observant. Many of us, myself included, aren't. He says, that if we have the world's goods, and by that, he's making us recognize, well, we can't give out of nothing, but we all have more than we think. Secondly, he says, we have to see someone who's in need, and they are literally all around us. It's amazing that in our culture here, you would think Northern Virginia, Nevada County, the top 250 or so counties in the country, that we would have needs. We have more than 100 families come to our food bank every week. And when we talk to schools about, hey, can you help us find people who probably are not going to help but need it? They regularly tell us, well, how many do you want? Because we've got a lot. So they're here. They're all in. And they're even in the church. And they're even ourselves. If you recognize the need that we have. 30 says we're to speak out about it and respond appropriately, not passively or sitting back. And he challenges them, don't close your heart towards others who are in need. He said, this is the one way in this context. He said, this is one way that we actually know we are genuinely saved. So how can you say the love of God abides in you, that you are actually born again, you understand it and have experienced the love of God, and then see need and be able to meet that need, yet shut up your heart and go, no, I can't do that. He challenges you to consider, am I really a believer when I do that? Now, I will tell you honestly, it is hard to see need, and it's hard to know how to help accurately. I know I'm tempting. I was in Baltimore one year, and we would be out sharing on the streets, and we talked to a lot of people, and you regularly meet homeless people. And I remember there were a couple of guys that came in, you know, got to see in an ongoing way, and we started talking, how do you give in a way that doesn't harm, okay? And so they often just ask for money, and they, I talked to another leader there, and his wife was one of the working street people for an extended time, and he said, they'll figure out your deal, and they will line up. If you're religious, they'll talk to you. If you're a businessman, they will talk respectful and in a way that you want to hear. You know, they know how many times how to work this system. So our team went on them, and instead of giving them money, they knew that probably in the life they needed, they were buying through different things. Last day we're there, he saw them again, and they wanted to say goodbye, and they asked him for money. He said, no, we really can't do that. And they cussed him out. And they left totally dejected. He failed. I said, no, you haven't. Hard to give in a way that really helps. And you've got to realize, you know, we're not talking about saying things that actually isn't just go love everybody. It's saying, God, I don't care. I'm ready. I want to respond. You just need to let me see it. And what I need to work on my heart that I have a heart that's willing to respond to. And God says, I do just that. He comes here. Do I have anything that of my own that can help others? You naturally think everyone else has got it together and we're not really. You might think, well, I don't really have a job. But there is how many advertisers target your age. You know, because there's a lot of money that funnels through you. You may not have it, but you have a way to get it, and it comes to you through you, and you spend money. So they are after you. Now, what if you use some of that money in a different way? I would challenge you that this is the time in your life where you've got to really think about money and how you use it. Don't just think, I don't have it. Our inaction ultimately is not out of a lack of resources, because a lot of your greatest resource is not money. That's true. Your greatest resource is actually time. But you think you don't have much, and I would challenge you, you have as much as you want. But you need to be wise with it. You need to learn how to use it. I mean, when camp, I know we talked about a lack of time. Have you ever considered tithing the most valuable thing you possess, and that is your time? What if on a daily basis you gave about 2.4 hours every day? That'd be crazy. Let's cut it less than half. Maybe give about 1 hour to help you. Would you spend time with them? Would you call someone? Would you visit someone? What if you tie your time? You've got time. You need to change other things to find it in the way that you can use it. Same as what's our vision. Do we see things or are we oblivious to it? I know for myself, I could be so totally consumed by what has to happen that I just block out everyone else around me. And that's where our culture goes. The cool thing is, this generation does talk and has a heart to meet needs. More than any before. I'm old enough to remember the 60s, which was a very, not to be aware of things that were going on in society, and they tried to do things. And then we went into, you know, all the way up through the 80s and 90s, and everyone came back to making money and spending it on myself. But this guy just says, I want to affect the world. That's Samaritan that Jesus talked about. So I think there's some things there that I think speak to us about how God would have us respond. In doing this, Jesus gives us a picture of what love and action really looks like. Luke 10 basically says this. I'm going to actually cruise through it from a higher level, but you can follow along if you want. He basically says this. Okay, there's a man who says, what do I need to basically get to heaven? And he said, that's the answer correctly. That God already has so in mind, I'm going to be. And then he said, who's my neighbor? So this is Jesus' answer. And he says, okay, your neighbor's this. Your average Jewish guy goes on a trip. On that trip, he gets mugged, just like that guy did on the street. Okay? When he's mugged, what happens? Two extremely religious people, a priest and a Levite, go by and don't touch him. Why? It doesn't say. But then one outcast guy, a guy that anyone who heard would have recognized as a different kind of guy, it's a Samaritan. And a Samaritan is someone who their people were the ones that, when Israel was taken away in the captivity, they were the ones that didn't end up going. Okay? They were some of the ones left behind. And when they were there, they started basically getting into other religions and kind of added to their Jewish faith. Okay? So when the nation came back, we found these people who are half brothers in a sense, who had basically given up their faith and sold out. That's a Samaritan. He says, this Samaritan, this low-life, no-count person, saw the person, the man in need, didn't pass by, but actually stopped. And this is what it says specifically about it. The Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to the place where he was, and he saw him. He had compassion. And he went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on and on. And then he sent him on his own and all, and brought him to him and took care of him. And the next day, he took out the denarii and gave it to the innkeeper, saying, take care of him. He transferred that responsibility temporarily and said, whatever you spend, I will repay you when I come back. And then he asked, who was his neighbor? And the guy said, the guy who acted. He said, you have right to do that. That's the answer to your question. And that would be the same question. It's really not. Is the neighbor? It's will you be neighbor to anyone God puts around us? And God says that's what we really want. So, the point is to be trying to make everyone is a neighbor. Everyone is a neighbor. Okay? It's not the guy who lives on the back of their life, it's the one God brings into the proximity of your life. Secondly, everyone can make excuses. I think you are probably the people who are didn't stop. Okay? Number one, I mentioned earlier. This guy was dead, not really dead, like totally dead, they'd be unclean, and then they'd have a problem. They obviously had some place to go. They were probably, they could have been late. I'm like, I don't really have time. They could have thought, this could be a trap. If I let them, someone could jump out and mug me, so I'm not going to do it. Or they could just come up to us and say, it's not my problem. I don't really want to get involved. We don't know why, but we can all have excuses. And some of them actually are legit. I do not want you on the way home to pick up a hitchhiker and go buy a Pullman ticket. Okay? There is wisdom involved in how you help and who you help under what circumstances. There are times when I will stop and where I will pick up a hitchhiker. Well, I probably wouldn't do it with my whole family there when they were younger. Okay? So there's wisdom in doing it. His heart was open, his schedule was changed. He was willing to do whatever was needed. Bottom line, he loved this stranger the way Jesus did. Now, I want to show you one more video, but this is to encourage you what also happens today that we'll be a part of as well. I don't know what happened, but there are tons of people falling in there. I mean, some actually get dizzy and fall in, and others end up trying to actually commit suicide. But you got to be careful at some stations. But that was amazing. What is the difference between the people in that video and Moses? They saw, so did the others. They had compassion. The others may have, but they could not act. While many were trying to fly, I felt bad, I'm sure a number of the women that were there trying to fly down a train, they probably physically could not rescue situation to every ball. And they're not as obvious as those. You can't miss those. But obviously, even if you see people on the floor, my question is, the woman who got mugged, why in the world didn't she have that guy? Why did someone, what called that guy by that guy? You know, and the woman in the hospital is like, seriously, someone came, go get a nurse and say, the difference is, will you act? Or you actively, or for whatever reason, you're going to set up, but it's not their problem. It's not my deal. So here's the sign of Christmas when we give gifts. I would tell you to give the gift of action. You deal with your heart, you try to do your sin, you prepare yourself to be used by God, and be ready to act. Here are some actions God would have you take. Okay, really quickly. Number one, one of the best and most effective things you can do in action is praying. You can pray. I think that is inaction, but it's actually, think of it, you are actually taking the time to go to the one who is the change agent, the one who can control all things, change all things, reach all people, has no barriers, has no limitations, and you're saying, God, I'm calling on you to act. I am asking you to do what only you can do. Some of you know people right now in situations that only will be changed by prayer. Your words, your actions, they won't affect them. They need to be there. They're good. They're not, if they're not in church. But you need God to work. You need God to intervene. I know for me, when I became a believer and my whole rest of my family, they were religious, but they didn't have credit. I just said, God, I don't know what to pray, but whatever it takes, would you please let my family come to know you? Because I don't want to go to eternity without them. And one by one, he answered that prayer. All the way to my dad. I only truly got confirmation where he was after he died. But God did in his time and his way. Will you pray? Or will you be like me and continue to think about it and talk about it but not do it? There are people in your life who desperately need your prayers, starting with you. And the first thing in 1 Samuel 12, Samuel said a very interesting statement. He said, far be it from me that I should sin against the Lord by ceasing to pray for you. So if you want to do it in a terribly bold action step, begin to pray seriously, clearly, and fervently, and ask the God of the universe to do what only can do. Second, by listening and asking. By listening and asking. People around you all the time are showing and sharing their needs, but they're doing it in ways that typically are not obvious. We are deaf to them, and we blind them. We are really busy. We are connected by Facebook and other things, but that doesn't put us to the point where we get some other time to our hearts and minds and lives. My question is, do you really have a clue of what's going on in your parents' life right now? I doubt you do. As a parent, I can tell you candidly, there's a lot I don't feel the freedom to come up with. It's not appropriate to. We as parents think about things that you don't. We are thinking about your future long before you go. And yet, your parents can often take things and blow them up, and they can imagine beyond the immediate. And that's their one, their issue. But they're also doing things that, whether it's losing a job, dealing with our parents, you know, my dad died almost 2 years ago. My mom is failing in some ways. We carry that. You don't. We don't expect you to. But we are carrying things that you probably don't understand. You're probably dealing with things, I can guarantee you, many of you, your parents are dealing with things that they know that we could have done differently. And maybe it is even in relationship to their relationship with you. They would love to have a child. They would love to have a second chance. And just the way life is normal, you're not doing anything necessarily wrong, but what kind of gets passed on to them is, I'm too busy for you, Dad, I'm too busy for you, Mom. I understand that. But I just want to throw it out there. If you're aware, you might want to intervene. The first thing though is you're going to start listening and start asking these questions. The same way with your friends. I doubt that many of you who have friends at school know what's going on. And I would throw this out to you. Have you ever asked the second question? I know for me, when I was in high school, I grew up with family than most people, and I'd see two in the hall, and I'd say, hey, how are you doing? Morning. Good morning. And most people are like, you know, everybody's like, yeah. The second question is, you know, when someone slows down enough to go and you're talking to them, how are you really doing? know if I care too much about you to see you go that way. It is not a way to take the key from a friend of yours who's going to try to drive somewhere and you say, I'm sorry, I'll drive you there. You're going to ask. You're going to intervene. Before there was intervening and serving, when action is called for, we saw that on the video. It's interesting, there's a quote, it says, all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing. That's all we've got to do, is do nothing. The natural is evil. There are ways we can intervene in everyday life. Again, I'm going to give you a couple quick ideas. Have you ever been in a place where someone is short on money? Have you ever been willing to go, hey, I'll take care of that for you, no problem. He was talking about a show that I looked at a quick clip, and they showed this guy. It was a setup, but there's this guy that was supposed to be his first date, and the guy that came didn't have any money, and he started asking people at tables around him, you know. And so they're filming what's happening, you know, people are him, oh, you should never date him again. He's like a loser, you know. But no one said, James, he didn't want to help you out. They didn't. When someone's down and starts retreating in isolation, you pursue them. And so, the day we're all talking about someone else, have you ever thought to say, you know what? That was a friend of mine, and I just really appreciate you just dropping there. Because they mean so much to me that you talk about them that way. But I would encourage you, if that's something you're struggling with, I'd be more happy to go with you to them. And I'd love to make it right. Because you're right. They do struggle with things. This is not the time or place. This is not the way. If you do that, people will start trusting you if you know, you know what? They don't like me. I know kids who told their friends who are about to get an abortion to say, no, they're all the choices. That is a time to intervene. They may reject it, they may look down on you, but it's time. Everyone has blind spots. I know that, you know, we all know and love Aaron Reed, and I can pick on him because he's so wide open. I put the way, it's funny, I was sitting at this table and this girl's like, I know the guy's brother was the person. I don't know who the second one was. He sure was smiley. And so, that's Aaron Reed. He's a friend of mine. He's wholehearted. Well, I remember sitting down there and saying, you know, Aaron, it was so difficult for me. I said, you talk too much. He's like, no. I'm like, sometimes you do. So, here's your assignment. You can only give 2 sentences. And you would have thought I'd be kidding. Like, what? 2 sentences to answer questions? I'm like, yeah, so I get. And actually, he goes, man, what are you talking about? I didn't even notice that. Thank you for telling me. Well, I thought about it. When you intervene to tell them. Have you ever thought when someone has a financial need that maybe you'll intervene, even in an anonymous way? I know some of you have loved friends enough to pay for them to go to camp. And that is really cool. It's better to say, hey, don't let them know who. I don't want to be awkward. I'd like to help them. Or last one, I get really personal. Have you ever noticed your mom doing too much? Have you ever thought of just really committing yourself to serving in a way that isn't acting? It's not being a good boy. It's intervening. It's saying, you know what? I can do laundry. I can learn how to do that. I can make a breakfast. I can look at you. I can take out the trash. I can mow the lawn. I can even dig out my room and make the floor become visible. I can do that.
Those are things I can do.
Absolutely. You can intervene and you can serve. Number 5, you can ask for help. This is one you can ask for help. This is one that a lot of people don't realize is actually a good deal. Because we are all made to be self-starters. To prove that we don't need anybody, we've got it all wired. You know what Jesus did? It was crazy. I mentioned earlier, when he was at the well, you know, the Samaritan, the woman at that well, and he said to her, would you give me a drink of water? Well, he literally could have gotten it himself. He did not. He had that need. He let her be involved in that need. He validated her as a person, as a mentor. He didn't talk to a woman like that in public, and he didn't. And the disciples came back and were like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm doing that here. You know, but here's the challenge. Are you really trying to have the truth that you have no need for anyone else to help? Well, I challenge you to humble yourself, recognize your needs, and allow others to help you. You need to ask the parents for wisdom, so you will probably find more reasons not to even go there. You're struggling with things in your stuff. Some of you, and you need to ask someone to help you get out. That demonstrates one of the greatest actions you can do is you can say, will you cool story. Me and this other guy are good friends. They go to University of Central Florida. They had the world was mission in Haiti. They went down, they fought, his friend came back, and he decided, I want to commit myself to helping raise money for it. So what did he do? He used his talents. He disco parties. Okay, so at these disco parties, whatever money he got, he gave them. He went down again, he saw that he was even greater. Came back, and he goes, no, I like to cook. So he started cooking and doing things. He actually did pancake breakfast at Crusade Crusade. They actually liked his pancakes. They were really good. He was very creative. But he was also really good at cooking. So he's like, hey, I like cooking, and I can do something with this. So catch this out. If you guys know, what do I do? He decided, I'm going to start making meals. So he would actually start catering meals just out of his little resources. And he asked Mark, he said, you know what? I think I can use this in a great way. Would you help me? So this is what they did. This is crazy. Two college kids, flat broke, don't have any money. All right? This evening, they're really committed to it. So he starts doing this catering business with Mark. And the commitment is, we want to raise money so that every meal I make here, a kid at the orphanage where they're going to put some meal there. They started their own 501c for, what is that? They are now doing it as a business, full-time, and employees. They are committed to reaching people who can pull them out of a lifestyle. And so they're using street people and reaching some women who they know are on the streets, trying to make a living on the streets. And while he's with the woman, the guy that the friend announced, he said, it's really cool what's going on right now. One of the girls became a Christian. The story is crazy. I mean, it's huge. Now all the staff and everybody, are asking them to do it because they understand the mission and they do an excellent job and it works. Came from an idea and kids who had nothing. And now they're contributing thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars every year to go in a way that actually is working and doing something significant. We need to dream dreams. You are the ones who dream. The parents are locked in. They're not going to go there. You need to say, God, hey, what is the need you called me to meet? And how can I do it? I don't know how, but I can use whatever little thing I've got and I will do it. I challenge you to dream things. There's one thing that you can ask that's just really cool as well that you will not think of at the moment. It's called waiting upon the Lord. God calls you to wait upon the Lord. And bottom line, this is what it is. When you face something in your life, and we all do it, it's way bigger than us, God says, oh, I don't know it works, but you need to wait to see as it happens. You who are seniors, you've put out, you've done your work, you've put out your applications to college, and now you have a choice. You will either worry or you'll give to God and wait upon Him. And waiting upon Him has two things. Number one, there is the waiting part, which means it's not happening yet, it's not in my time. I will choose in this waiting to give it to God in a way that He will give me the peace that He promises. And I'll wait for Him. The second thing, that's what happens at a restaurant. You have a waiter who waits upon you. God calls us to